This is Business Rockstars. I'm Brittany Lehman, and my guest today is Ben Ricciardi, CEO of Times 10. Ben, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So for those who are not familiar with Times 10, tell me a little bit about your company and your entrepreneurial journey.
Yeah, so we're a full-service creative agency based in Burbank, California, and I worked with a bunch of different types of brands, personalities. Started the company about 8 years ago. I was broke as a joke and started from there.
And you started your company with what, $1,500?
Yeah, about $1,500. Okay. My ex-girlfriend was putting $20 bills in my wallet for lunch.
Okay.
It was a rough journey. I had been in the music business for a really long time, but hit a snag towards the end of my music industry career. Wasn't sure totally what I was going to do, but I knew a lot about marketing and branding from my music industry days and just from growing up in kind of the entrepreneurial lifestyle, and said, hey, let's give this a shot.
And you were completely self-funded, and then you grew your agency into a multi-million dollar agency. How did you do that, and what tips do you have for entrepreneurs who are looking to do the same?
Yeah, I mean, we started, you know, it was about 7.5 years ago, and it was just kind of, I looked at it as building blocks and stepping stones. There were some times we got knocked down a few stairs, but we always built ourselves back up. But it was really like growing larger and larger clients time after time, and just over-delivering as much as we possibly could to make sure that we had more opportunity within those businesses. And it's been a fun journey, and we've grown over double every year since we started the agency.
Wow. What has it been like kind of managing a high-growth company?
It has a lot of ups and downs and a lot of struggles. Making sure you don't hire too many people, but making sure you're not under-hiring too. We have over 20 people on the staff working full-time, full benefits. And I love that aspect, but it's also super difficult to make sure with such a high overhead, if you have a rough month, how do you kind of keep the lights on and keep building?
Right. I want to talk a little bit about your entrepreneurial journey. Was there ever a time when you were starting Times 10 where you thought you were really going to fail and that it was just not going to happen?
I mean, I think any entrepreneur feels that way often, and I still feel that way to this day, and I think it drives you, it excites you. But there's definitely been a few times where we were needed money to keep the lights on and had to figure out either a client or a loan or something to keep the lights on. That happened many times. I mean, I think there's no get-rich-quick schemes out there, especially in the social media and content world.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for us, it's just finding those opportunities to keep pushing and keep growing one step at a time.
Absolutely. And you've worked with major brands like Adidas and Nike. How did you get them as clients, and kind of what was your strategy?
Yeah, a lot of it just came from stepping stones and then really small projects with really large brands. Mm-hmm. So we would start with a project that was, you know, with Nike, it was an under $10,000 project with Jordan Brand, actually. And that was a stepping stone that led to more opportunities. And then with Adidas, there was a small project that was a last-minute project that kind of nobody wanted. And we took it on and completely over-delivered. And now we've done about 150 projects with Adidas since.
And your family is kind of entrepreneurial.
Yes.
Do you think you were born to be an entrepreneur?
I mean, I don't know if born, but watching our pops and our mother, who were both entrepreneurs from when I was born, and seeing their journey from so many different things they've done and so many different opportunities. Yeah, I mean, I think that absolutely affected my brother and I from a young age to always have that kind of lifestyle and that spirit.
And who is Times 10 perfect client, would you say?
I mean, I think our perfect client is anybody we understand where they want to take the brand. Our job is not to change brands, but to grow brands and make them better in what their journey they want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, I think it's anybody that we understand where we're trying to go. You know, our newest client is a client called Simply Safe, which is a home security company.
I think I've heard of them.
That many wouldn't expect after us working with Nike and Adidas, but we understood what the goal was and the objective was with us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the biggest thing for us, is as long as we understand the goal and the objective and we feel like we can over-deliver it, that's where I think the perfect client comes from.
Tell me, what is With Marketing?
Yeah, so my thing over the last few years is, you know, coming off of the Super Bowl, you see these large, expensive commercials which do work, but I think that's a kind of old, antiquated system to think you can post one commercial and see success in your business flourish.
Right.
The youth today is so desensitized by advertisements that you really need to pound them over the head with all different types of content and advertising, mm-hmm. whether it's influencers, whether it's billboards, whether it's different types of Facebook and Instagram ads, whether it's content where it's product placement that they don't even think you're paying for, but it has it there. It's really just the idea of creating with for your consumer to see you in so many different places at the same time. For example, a company that I think is doing this pretty well is Happy Tea, which is a CBD tea.
Yes.
You're seeing billboards all over the place. Mm-hmm. You're seeing influencers posting. You're seeing Facebook ads. You're seeing content that has Happy Tea inside of it.
Right.
It's just all over the place. And I think what that does is at some point you go, I got to really figure out what this Happy Tea thing is.
Right.
And they've done a good job to really, you know, really pound that into your head.
Yeah, they have. So for those who are not familiar with Times 10 and those kind of just tuning in, give me a little elevator pitch on your business.
Yeah, we're a full service creative and social agency. Try to do everything in-house. So we have full-time content team, design team, social team. And we are an agency that does all different types of social campaigns, content campaigns, and then also any sort of content, building out websites, things like that.
What was your favorite campaign that you guys did?
We've done a few. There was a fun one we did last year called the Nightmare Campaign for a colorway of James Harden's Harden Vol 2s. And it was a lot of fun. We had billboards all over. We created a 1-800 hotline number for people to call in if they were having nightmares about James Harden. And it went great. It was really cool. And Adidas loved it and worked with a lot of different influencers on it and did some really cool stuff with it.
What would you tell startups who think, my branding in the beginning isn't that important. I don't need to do any campaigns. What would you tell them?
I mean, I think your brand, you only have one time to make a first impression, mm-hmm. and it doesn't matter what your size is. I tell people, don't put out anything if it's going to be not great.
Right.
And I'd rather you put out nothing than you put out something that's subpar. Mm-hmm. So I think at any point that you're at, you should really push to have great content. And it all doesn't have to be insanely expensive, but I would rather a startup spends money on less content and less things, but they're better quality mm-hmm. than more stuff that's mediocre quality.
Right. And your business is about 8 years old, correct?
Yeah.
And when you first started, it was very tight. You were all self-funded. Did you ever think you were going to fail? And how did you kind of overcome that?
Yeah, I mean, we've been self-funded ever since we started. And with being self-funded, there's always struggles of worries of failure. And, you know, there's been times where I've needed to find money before payroll, things like that. This is a little while ago, which is good. But absolutely, I mean, you always worry about failure. And if you don't, then you're just kidding yourself, because just about every business, no matter the size, always worries about failing. I know there's a quote from Jeff Bezos that told his investors that there was a 70% chance that Amazon was going to fail.
Wow.
Multiple times.
Yeah.
So I think if Amazon, which is probably one of the biggest companies in the world, felt the same way, I think if you're not feeling that way, then you're probably doing something wrong.
Yeah. What do you think the biggest social media trends will be in 2019?
I think IGTV is going to be a super important one. Mm-hmm. I think there's just going to be many different ways that you can monetize content. And then I think influencer marketing is just going to keep growing.
Yeah.
It's something that I think we're probably 25% into what it's going to be. Mm-hmm. And I think brands are figuring out the power and the cost that's better for them of using influencers in different ways.
I have a question about influencer marketing, because yeah. I always see people posting and they do the hashtag ad. And it's like, do you think that's really, I mean, do you think it will keep going up? Because to me, sometimes when I look at that, I'm thinking, well, they're just promoting it because they're getting paid. And do you think people could kind of see through that transparency, or do you think it doesn't really matter?
I don't think it's a huge, huge deal. I think that hashtag ad at the end, I think there's also a lot of kids that don't even pay attention to it.
Right.
You know, the youth doesn't totally understand it at first. I think if somebody is savvy, they're going to know that almost all of the stuff they see with an influencer, with a product, is probably paid for.
Right.
I don't think that's an issue. I think influencer marketing is just going to keep going and building.
Yeah. So what can a client expect when they first kind of sign with you? Walk me through the process.
Yeah, I mean, our hope is to really understand the business and the objectives mm-hmm. as quickly as possible, and getting that debrief from them of what they think their business is and what their goals are. and making sure that those align with what we think that they should be doing. Mm-hmm. I think that's super important. And then also figuring out what are we trying to accomplish, making sure there's goals that are set that we can execute on and knock out of the park. Because if you don't have those, you have so much of a better chance to have an unhappy customer.
And where can people learn more about you and your business?
My Instagram, I would say, is where most people find me, which is at BenTimes10. My website is bentimes10.com, and then the company's website is times10.net. All of them are with the numerals, so 10.
Okay, Ben, thank you so much for joining us
today. Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Thanks. This is Business Rockstars. That was my wonderful guest, Ben Ricciardi, CEO of Times10.
A new poll says more Americans approve of President Trump than they do the big media. That's why millions are tuning in to Newsmax TV, America's new conservative channel. On Newsmax TV, see Bill O'Reilly, Pat Buchanan, Alan Dershowitz, Mike Reagan, and more. Bill O'Reilly's No Spin News Show is on Newsmax TV. Get it on DirecTV Channel 349, Xfinity 1115, Dish 216, U-verse 1220, Fios 615, and Spectrum. Newsmax TV. Real news for real people.
Message and data rates may apply.
What if there were a top-ranked business degree that gave you access to world-renowned faculty leaders and mentors, but on your schedule? The W.P. Carey School of Business at Arizona State University is now accepting high-quality applicants for its online MBA, Information Management, and Business Analytics Master's programs. Learn more about the W.P. Carey business degrees online. For more information, text RANK to 79645. That's RANK to 79645.
You shouldn't have.
We are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. Welcome back to Business Rockstars, where we are continuing our conversation with the CEO and founder of Local Roots Farms. And we got to backtrack a little bit to talk about your story, because it's a really good one. You were working for your family business, and this is really where you discovered the need for what you're doing today. Can you tell me that story?
So my great-grandfather and his brother founded Utility Trailer Manufacturing back in 1914, over 100 years ago. Fast forward till today, and then the market leader in North America for refrigerated trailers. So I worked in that business after college and learned a phenomenal amount, both about how businesses run and really saw a lot of the lessons around how you build long-term value by building an organization that is focused on not only integrity, but delivering incredible products and services to its customers and really having a sense of value and long-term purpose. And also saw a lot of the challenges that our customers faced every day around managing these lengthy and burdensome supply chains, especially for short shelf life perishable products. If you look at fruits and vegetables in the US, you have spoilage rates of 30, 40, 50 plus percent. That cost gets borne by the consumer. And a lot of people can't afford to buy those kind of products today. So it really showed me that through business and innovation, you can start to actually tackle some of those societal problems that we face every day.
Yeah, I love your story because I interview a lot of entrepreneurs who worked in their industry for someone else first, and that's mm-hmm. how not only they discovered a problem, but also really knew the ins and outs of their industry that allowed them to be such a better entrepreneur once they went out on their own. Do you mm-hmm. think that that experience was invaluable working for someone else in your industry?
100%. I don't think I could have done anything that I've done so far without that experience, that grounding, that acknowledgement of what it takes and the rigors that large corporations have to go through to manage a network. And I think young entrepreneurs can be a little bold and brash and say, hey, we can disrupt the world and we can do everything better. And that's kind of what it takes to be an entrepreneur, is to believe you can.
Yeah, that ambition's amazing.
It is.
And hey, sometimes that works. You know,
totally.
I've also interviewed many entrepreneurs who have went straight into entrepreneurship, but I think that's more of the exception. Mm-hmm. The rule is that you got to work in your own industry first.
Yes.
So tell me about what you did next, because I know that it wasn't mm-hmm. straight to entrepreneurship. You worked in finance, right?
Correct. So I became very interested in how technology was helping to transform not only the industry that my family's business serviced, but also, you know, how food, water, energy, and logistics, and what are those challenges around the planet in those categories, and how does that affect people's lives? Bottom of Maslow's pyramid, you know, who can afford to have access to clean water and food? And how are we going to support a growing global population without bankrupting the planet's resources? And how can we use technology and innovation to do that? And so I started working with some funds and became an investor myself, focused on an investment thesis around resource scarcity. How do we look for technologies that can help alleviate those challenges in those very challenging industries? Industries that are trillion-dollar markets, but sometimes highly regulated, frequently capital-intensive. And so simply a software-based solution is rarely the answer. You need to find a more nuanced way to scale technology into an at-scale solution for companies and operators in those spaces. And that's what drew me into Local Roots, which was how do we build a suite of technologies and a process that is disruptive, but deploy it in a way that lets us work with those large-scale operators today, distributors of fresh fruits and vegetables that have massive supply chain operations across North America. How do we take something that's very new to them and package it in a model that allows us to seamlessly integrate into their supply chains?
So what did you learn from this time being the investor that you took with you now to your own business?
Investors are wrong most of the time.
Okay.
And capital does not create a good business, right? Good businesses are created by teams and entrepreneurs and a strategy and a good product market fit and an incredible engineering team. And capital can unlock growth and value that's already been created. And that's where I realized that as an investor, I had very little control over the success of those businesses. And simply trying to pick winners is so challenging when the business plan of any company in any day is very rarely what's going to lead them to success in 2 years. And so betting on the team is really the best strategy as an investor, especially at the earliest stage, because the product can change, the customer can change, the market can change, the team can change at a certain level, but it's the jockey on the horse that you really want to bet on. And I realized after making a number of investments, seeing some of them go belly up and some of them make some good progress, that I really wanted to be an operator. And I really wanted to be in the trenches building every day, because that's really where I saw I could be most impactful in my career. And that's my personal passion.
There are so many good nuggets in what you just said. I want to break down a couple of them. First of all, you said that as an investor, you're usually wrong. What do you mean by that?
Almost all early stage businesses fail. That is a fact of life. Sometimes the best team, the best technology with an incredible plan can fail for any range of reasons. Lack of access to financing is how most businesses fail, running out of cash. Not understanding your customer well, not having a plan that you can execute, or failing on execution. There's a million ways that a company can fail to deliver its returns and grow.
And then the other thing, you said that a business plan will likely change. So tell me what you mean by that. And also, if you could speak to the business plan in general, how important is it and how flexible should it be?
Absolutely. I think a business plan is absolutely critical because it demonstrates that you've thought through every inch of your business. And that planning and thought process is instrumental, but you need flexibility in its execution. It shouldn't be a static document that you build once and simply use as your Bible for the next couple of years. That is not a good way to build a business. So you want to iterate and improve. But if you haven't done the type of diligence and research and analysis into your customer, into the market, into your technology, into your strategy, into your financial requirements, into your team build, then you're going to have a lot of challenges as you move forward.
Like you said, it's all about that team. So what was your strategy for building a solid team?
Looking for rock stars, looking for business rock stars, people that share the vision and have a shared, you know, value system around both building a for-profit, highly scalable, highly valuable business, but one that's trying to make a social impact that's going to be meaningful. And then looking for people that are incredibly intelligent and can wear multiple hats at the earliest stages. So people that have a wide range of experiences that can draw from those and help you stay lean at the earliest stages when access to capital is very challenging. And as you move forward, start to bring in A players, executives who have experience building and selling companies, who can find those. Technical experts that can really come in and drive your technology and your product into the future. And then managing expectations for all of them. You know, a startup is a very exciting thing in a lot of ways, but fraught with risk. And so how do you bring people in, compensate them fairly, and communicate appropriately? Do the same thing to your investors. Tell them that exciting upside in the story and how you can change the planet and deliver them 10x returns on their capital while still being honest about the challenges of your business. No product's perfect. No strategy is perfect. Balancing those challenges that may pull you in different directions. And doing that as your team evolves, as communication structures change, as you need to rethink, you know, as you can't walk around and shake everyone's hand every day. Can you get everyone in the same room? You know, there was an interesting point in our business when we stopped fitting inside a conference room. How do we all connect? How do we create that shared experience that's so important?
Very, very insightful. Thank you so much for all of your wisdom and, hey, for your meaningful work. So cool what you're doing.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. We are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. This is Business Rockstars.
This report is brought to you by Bank of America. The new Bank of America Business Advantage Cash Rewards credit card makes maximizing rewards easy for entrepreneurs. Cardholders can decide how they earn 3% cash back each month, choosing from six popular spending categories, from gas stations to office supply stores and consulting services. Kevin Condon, Bank of America.
Running a small business often means doing many jobs in one. Flexibility is key. So we're excited to put our small business cardholders in charge of how they can earn cash back each month. They now have the power to maximize their rewards to match their changing business priorities. And our Business Advantage Relationship Rewards members earn even more. They get a credit card rewards bonus that can boost the earnings in their choice category to up to 5.25%.
Cardholders can change their cash back choice category once every month in their mobile banking app or through online banking. For more, visit bankofamerica.com/smallbusiness.
Welcome back to Business Rockstars. Now let's go to Mark Lack.
I'm Mark Lack, and this is Business Rockstars. My guest today is Lisa Song Sutton. You're a serial entrepreneur, and you are up to some amazing things. Tell us, what are the different four companies that you have?
Yes, yeah, so we are in the cupcake industry, swimwear industry, real estate industry, and marketing app.
Okay, what's the hardest part about juggling four different businesses? I have to know.
Well, you know, I think the hardest part is just making sure that all the companies are growing and excelling. Okay. Each of those need the focus. Each of those need the time that's put in to sit down and dedicate to it.
It's like four children.
And that's why you have to have a partner. That's why, you know, you can't do this alone. Just like it says, it, you know, it takes a village, right?
Yeah.
Same idea with businesses. You need a strong team. You need partners. You need operational staff that's there, hands and feet on the ground, so that you can have the more large-scale vision to keep the company moving forward.
So what would you say are three traits that every entrepreneur starting out must know before they get started?
Three traits. I think they need to make sure they have a strong sense of self. Figure out your why. Why are you going into business in the first place? Why are you creating something?
Don't just get in and be like, I'm trying to make money. I want to do this.
Yeah, it's not just, I want to be an entrepreneur. Like, an entrepreneur doesn't mean anything.
Find a purpose to serve that's greater than yourself was what I say. Mm-hmm. Don't just make money, make a difference. And so figuring out how you can get into the business world to actually contribute and impact the world is so much more important than just getting in to make money.
Exactly. And just finding out, you know, kind of mapping out too, what do you want to do with the business? What's your end goal? Is it something you want to build and sell? Is it something you want to keep as a legacy and pass down to your kids?
There's really only like two different types of businesses, and you were touching on them right there. There's a lifestyle business, one that kind of allows your lifestyle to be funded through your business, in which case you can hand that down to family. Mm-hmm. And the other type of business is one that you build strategically from day one to sell. Mm-hmm. And so which ones are you doing right now for your business is what I want to ask you after, but you got to go through those three steps still.
Well, secondly, figure out who you want on your team. Even if it's just that one operational person or that one strong person, figure out who you want on your team and vet them well. Look at social media. Look at everything that they're doing already and what are they already putting out? Because as a business owner, you are the face of your brand, even if you are not the face person or not.
I love that. Number three, though, you got to give us that third one. I didn't forget.
Number three, really take time to consider how, just as you touched on, how you want it to impact your community. So is it a type of company that you think could have a global impact and you want to take it international, take it public perhaps domestically? Yeah. Or is it something that you want really local, specific, specifically regionalized, really localized, and you want it to have that impact just there in your community that you live and work in?
Okay. So let's go to company culture, because I can only imagine that between four different companies, you either have a lot of similar company culture, or depending on how your partners are running the business, if you're not the one that's fully in charge of the operations and things like that, Maybe you've got some different company culture, but you tell me, how does the company culture look like in your business, and what are some best practices that other people can learn to adopt?
It's actually the former that you had mentioned, very similar in the sense that with all the companies, if you're talking cupcakes, penthouses, swimwear, app, whatever it is, if you scale up and take a bird's eye view, every single one of them is some sort of product that we're selling.
Yeah.
And so as a result, all the culture has to be very customer service oriented. The customer comes first. We're figuring out what the customer experience
is. In every business, hopefully, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think people who say that are, or who say the latter of it, it's very, very difficult for them to scale and grow their business because they're just so focused on, you know, kind of more immediate needs. But you really have to look at what the customer wants.
Only the government would probably say that it's the opposite,
and they're running really well, right?
And they're running fantastic. So I'm curious to know, four different businesses, right? Which one is the most profitable? You've got swimwear. You've got cupcakes, you've got real estate. So which one is the most profitable? I mean, I would be shocked if it's the cupcake business over the real estate business, especially since you said it's thriving in Vegas. But tell me which one is.
Well, for gross sales, it's definitely the real estate. Okay. Just because this is a really hot time in the market right now. Yeah. I mean, we just closed
Capitalize on it while it's here, you know?
Exactly right. We just closed out a huge quarter this past quarter.
Congrats.
For us. Thank you. But as far as profitability on our margins, the swimwear actually is the most profitable. And that's simply because we're able to buy low and sell high.
Yeah. What about the cupcake business is the fun part? And what about the cupcake business is the hard part? I'm assuming alcohol cupcakes, the fun part is probably eating it.
The really, really fun part and the best part, that's what I love about Sin City Cupcakes, is that we are the party. We get a chance to be part of everyone's celebration. So when you're coming to Las Vegas, whether it's a birthday party, a bachelor party, a spur of the moment party, whatever it is, there's a reason you're coming, and we get to have our product be part of your special occasion.
I love that. So when you're growing a business, finding partners is absolutely key. Creating great company culture is key. But what do you think about raising money? I think nowadays it's a trend. I think a lot of people see Shark Tank and they see incubators and all of these different things in Silicon Valley. There's even a TV show now. Mm-hmm. But there's all these things, and it's just reinforcing the trend that being an entrepreneur and raising money, that's the cool, that's the hip thing to do. It's trendy. But when do you know it's the right time to raise money?
For me personally, we bootstrapped every single one of the companies.
Okay.
So it was never in my mind to go ahead and raise money because I didn't want to feel like I was giving away the company. Mm. When you're raising those funds, when you're taking in investors, they're taking equity in the company in exchange for that money. And so you're already valuing the company before you've even had a chance to really test the market, before you've had a year or two in sales. So for me, bootstrapping just was in my nature, and that's how I wanted to do things. I do think there are some great resources available for funding,
though. I love
it.
Bootstrapping's in my nature, and you're over here rocking the red bottoms all dressed.
Well, that's from my Miss Nevada days. But, you know, I think there are some really great opportunities for funding, and especially with like the Title III that just got passed, that's huge. And crowdfunding is such a big thing now, too.
Yeah.
With crowdfunding, that's what's nice. You don't have to give away equity in your company, and you are able to take in funds from people who want to help you.
I love that. So have you guys ever done any crowdfunding?
No, we have not. Like I said, we've bootstrapped all of our companies. We've run operations. We ran operations really, really lean in the beginning, and we still are fiscally responsible now. But I think it's something to consider later if you want to scale. I think money can be used as fuel. And so even with the cupcakes, for example, we've had some inbounds, and we're considering only taking in funds so that we can scale quickly again to reach our target of selling.
Okay. What is the most difficult part that most entrepreneurs struggle with when they're getting started? You've started four different businesses. You've been a part of four right now. So I think you must know the most difficult thing that people typically encounter when they're first getting started on their entrepreneurship journey. What do you think it is?
What I've heard a lot from people is just a feeling of loneliness or feeling isolated. And what's nice is to, of course, like I said, one, realize you don't have to do it alone. Even if you are sole founder and sole CEO of your company, you don't have to do it alone. So have your network, have your people around you who get the vision of the company and are there even just for moral support. Even if they're not there, you know, feet on the ground with you inside the company day to day, they're there for moral support. But also build out the community in relation to engaging with others. So whether that's volunteering in the community and spending time there or joining a professional organization, I'm personally part of the YEC, which is the Young Entrepreneurs Council.
Yeah.
And we have a private Facebook group that's only YEC members. And so you can type in there, hey, I'm having a problem with an employee and, you know, A, B, and C happened. Has anyone encountered this before? And you will have people who jump on there and
so
comment.
So you have an association of people that can help you out.
Exactly right. Okay.
How has being resourceful served you in business? And how do you think other people can learn to become more resourceful when we live in an economy where we have more access to resources than we've ever had before?
Exactly right. Just taking that really holistic view, or even just scaling up and taking a bird's eye view of what are you doing, why are you doing it, and where do you want it to eventually go? If you can't answer those three questions about what you're doing right now, you better sit down and figure it out, because you're not going to be able to grow. You're going to constantly hit roadblocks and then have excuses for why it won't work.
Do you have a big why, a big purpose? Just for a simple yes or no, because then I'm going to tie in another one. Yes,
yeah,
you do?
Of course.
Okay, so you both, you know, you and I both know that having a big why is like fueling up your gas tank. You're only going to get your tank filled. And then after, for some people, it might be a couple months. Some people might be a few years. Some people might be a few decades. But eventually, you're going to get to a place where if you're not focusing on your why and constantly checking in on it, you're not filling up your tank. You're going to run out of gas eventually. So how does somebody make sure that they establish and understand and have a really clear why and purpose, and then make sure that they're constantly checking in with that?
I think when you establish your why and really dig down deep, if it's from a place of service, it's going to be replenished. Mm. So whether that's somebody who says, you know, I really want to build something important for my family, or I really want to make my parents proud, or I really want to find a way to give back to society or the community. If your why is built somewhere in a place of service, it's going to keep replenishing itself. So during my time as Miss Las Vegas and Miss Nevada, I did over 500 appearances in the Las Vegas and Nevada communities.
Yeah.
And so I was out reading at schools, I was volunteering at hospitals, I was out engaged in the community, and that filled me up every single time I had a chance to be out and be around people and be around the community.
It reminds me of the saying, the secret to living is giving.
Yes, yeah.
How important do you think it is as an entrepreneur to make sure that you stay hungry? I was interviewing Damon John recently from Shark Tank, and he said the number one key that separates super successful entrepreneurs from average entrepreneurs is how hungry they are. Mm-hmm. And so for you, how important is being hungry as an entrepreneur? You've got four different jobs, four different companies that you're working with, right?
It's so important. And I think with that motivation that you have internally, it's simply because you want more. You know that you're capable of achieving it. And I think that's important too, to have that self-confidence and that self-belief that you can be resourceful, even if you don't know how to do it yet. You say yes, and you figure it out later, right?
Yeah.
And that's a real thing. And I think if you have that confidence, it'll keep you going.
All right. So you've been on stages before, whether it was for your pageant or for speaking for different companies or for going into the community like you did. So this should be easy for you. I call it the stadium pitch, right? You walk out on stage, you've got a giant auditorium full of entrepreneurs and aspiring entrepreneurs, and they're all waiting for you to share your best advice ever with them in 30 seconds or less. So take the stage.
Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. I don't claim to be the smartest person or the most capable person, but I do have a really strong team around me, and I have a work ethic. And I think when you have an opportunity to really show that and just get in there and have feet on the ground, you just figure it out and you get an opportunity to show that.
I love that. Lisa, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
To be a great leader these days, you do not need a new set of skills. You simply need to execute the traditional ones at a higher level. Here's a few tips to become a better leader at work. I'm Alex Worley with the Business Rockstars Minute. Number one, lead by example. Leaders need to show, not just tell. If you want your employees to be punctual, make sure you're there on time or even early. Number two, find a mentor. The best leaders out there know when they need help, and they know where to turn in order to get it. Nobody can know everything, so finding someone you trust for advice when things get tough can make all the difference. Number three, never stop improving. Great leaders are constantly learning and always trying to improve themselves. There's always something that you can work on or a new skill to master. Be sure to keep your mind open to new ideas and possibilities. I'm Alex Worley, and this has been a Business Rockstars Minute.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter 0707 at checkout. That's harrys.com, code 0707. Enjoy.
This is your Tech It Out Minute with Mark Saltzman, brought to you by Asus.
So your computer crashed and you've tried everything to retrieve your data, but nothing worked. And now you've lost your photos, music, and other files, right? Wrong. Tim Margeson is from CBL Data Recovery.
Most of the time, it's not going to be a hard drive problem. It's not going to be a problem with the storage media. If it is, you need to make a decision on how important the information is to you before you kind of proceed further on it. Do you have an up-to-date backup? If you do, great. You know, just restore it, move on. If you don't, and you do want to treat the information, then you should probably seek out a recovery company at that point in time. Don't try YouTube. Don't try putting the hard drive in a fridge. Don't try any of that pseudoscience stuff. If the information is important to you, then make sure you get it done by somebody who's qualified to do it.
CBLDataRecovery.ca has more info.
That was your Tech It Out Minute, brought to you by Asus.
Welcome back to Business Rockstars. Now let's go to Mark Lack.
And joining me is two rockstar CEOs. Who are you and what do you do?
Well, my name is Jason Sullivan. I run two companies. One is called Viral On Demand. And like the name sounds, basically we cause stories, initiatives, and brands to go viral on demand. And there's a certain sequence and design that we do that. And also run a business consulting company where we help accelerate the growth of companies and to where they help to help them to get to sustainable flight by design.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you, Jason. Okay,
thank you.
And yourself?
My name is Chris Wong. I'm the CEO of a company called LifeSight. You can find us at LifeSight.co. Right? And what our company is, we're a digital, way to think about us, we're a digital vault. So we maintain information for individuals and families for them to be better prepared in case life in case life's emergency. So we maintain or will maintain and help manage and collaborate information such as passwords, health information, medical records, as well as even information pertaining to end-of-life issues.
Well, that sounds like an incredible platform. I'm excited to dive more into what your company's up to. Let's talk about entrepreneurship real quick, guys. When I got started, I always wanted to be an entrepreneur. But now that I am one, my whole perception about what the word means is completely different. What do you guys think? What is your definition of entrepreneurship? How do you feel about the word?
Definition of entrepreneurship? You know, it's a scary, scary word. You know, everybody, it's not cut out for everybody. It's not for the faint at heart. Like we were talking about a little earlier, you're going to fail. So just expect that. But we need more entrepreneurs. We need more job creators. And we need you. I mean, 70% of the GDP is created by small businesses. So we really need to, you know, incentivize entrepreneurs to open up new businesses. Yeah. That's one of the things that we try to do and to help them navigate those waters when because it is scary to get your company up and running. But, you know, it's a person that is a risk taker. That's what it means to me.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, I think we have a similar view. I would add courage. Right.
So there's a long list of things we could add.
Yeah. I mean, courage. I think there's also responsibility to build team leadership. Mm-hmm. Entrepreneur a lot of times implies a startup. So it's a startup, right? You're taking responsibility for families. You're taking people out of maybe established jobs.
Sure.
Right. So there's all kinds of things that go into executing as an entrepreneur, let's say.
And how, we were talking earlier before the cameras turned on. How many companies have you been involved in and successfully sold and exited?
So I'm a 30-year entrepreneur. So for me, this would be, LifeSight represents my seventh company. Out of the six companies prior to that, three of the companies, I started from a piece of paper, and the other three companies, I was kind of brought in as quote-unquote the professional management to take them to the next level. But I've sold all six of the companies and looking forward to the seventh.
So you're the guy that people want to be partnering with.
Yeah. Well, I enjoy it, right? Yeah. That's why I'm looking at this company. I expect this company to probably be the most fun and probably the most recognized
biggest home
company.
Run.
Exactly.
Yeah.
When you say that they were started on paper, were any of those on like a bar napkin or something like that?
Well, that's how yours was started, we know.
No, yeah.
Absolutely.
The idea for the first company was I basically was snowed in with my family in Lake Tahoe. And being snowed in, you can't do anything but at least think about it. So I actually did sit there, wrote the business plan, and then that was back in the heydays when the internet was kind of getting started and heat money was easily available. So I came back, called the venture capital, and my friend had a check for $5 million at the end of the week.
Oh, my goodness. No. I think that's the fastest path to raising money.
I don't think you can stop there. I think you need to back up just a moment because I had a $5 million check a week later. How is that possible? I mean, is it only people that are totally connected that's possible? Or
like you had to have had, that wasn't your first business.
It was my first business, right? But it was, so we can talk about this because as an entrepreneur, right, a lot of entrepreneurs start right away. I mean, they look at all their friends, they look at all their friends' success. And they just said, this is easy to do, right? All I need to do is just kind of quit my job.
Yeah, my friend did it. My family did it.
Yeah, I mean, it works. Mm-hmm. It works. But when I started, right, one, I didn't have the guts to do something like that. And so for me, I didn't really do my first company until I was probably like 10 years into my career.
I thought you were going to say 10 years old.
I mowed lawns and delivered papers.
Sure.
You know, I had the courage, right, after 10 years, but I did it after basically learning, right? I had a lot of mentors, learning about what not to do as well as what to do, then had the courage, and then there's so much money available at that time. I just said, well, if all these other people could do something, I could do it as well. So it's network.
Sure.
Network, and, you know, just, I think I get asked a lot, well, how long did it take you? When I started that company, you guys asked the question, how long did it take me to conceive the idea? And I said, it took me 10 years. They said, well, you just started this company last month.
You were the overnight success.
No, it took me 10 years to accumulate the network to raise the money, right, in that
so
1 week.
So you've been putting
time.
In the work and the reps to be prepared, which is a lot of times, I mean, that's like kind of like the old saying, right, luck or preparation and opportunity. What is the word? I'm tongue twister right now. Preparation and opportunity meet is luck.
Absolutely.
And so you had 10 years of preparation. Yeah. And when you had the idea, you already had the network in place to help you.
And of course, I was being facetious when I said the overnight success because other people see that and they go, they have no idea how much ice is underneath the iceberg.
No, you're right.
Right?
Yeah.
And you had that 10 years there, and then all of a sudden, then they see you as success.
Because you say you wrote out a business plan on paper and
I did,
later, $5 million bucks. So.
Yeah. Well, but Jason, I mean, looked at your bio, right? You had like odd jobs. You mowed lawns and things like that.
I was 8 years old. I started my first lawn mowing business.
So you mentioned that in your bio, right? Because that actually contributed to probably your personality and kind of your leadership skills.
Well, maybe I would hope so in some ways. And yes, but I mean, absolutely. 8 years old, but who's going to say no to an 8-year old that knocks on your door and says, hey, may I mow your lawn? So it was a little easier, I suppose, but I had to do the hard work, right?
Yeah.
So that did condition me for other things. And then also breaking down the ability to knock on the doors, which is important in any business, right?
Sure.
That we're involved with. We constantly have to be knocking on doors and meeting and talking to the right people. So yeah, that had a lot to do with it.
Guys, as we wrap up our segment here, what is maybe one last little sentence or two of inspiration you can give to those aspiring entrepreneurs that are out there or to those first-time CEOs?
You know, I would say my favorite quote is hope is not a strategy. Mm. You know, so again, you've got to have intelligence before you can have a strategy. So get about the business is talking to your current customers and your lost customers and your lost prospects and your wish list prospects and talk to your employees and talk to your senior level executives and be open with them and have an open door policy and get that information that you need so they can tell you that, hey, we're leaving this on the table or, you know, we're missing this opportunity or things like that.
And that's one of the common themes amongst all successful CEOs is they're very clear on what their purpose is. Guys, I wish we had more time. It's been a pleasure having you on.
Absolutely.
I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. This was a CEO Roundtable. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.